Ryan paused, looking up at them, and wondered whether there was anyone watching the master screens that he knew would be hidden deep in the heart of the redoubt. Anyone? Or anything? They continued for about 200 yards, always curving to the right, the concrete floor of the white corridor sloping slightly upward.
Like being inside the Guggenheim in old New York.
What's a Guggenheim?
An art gallery, Dean. One of the best. The design was sort of based on the shell of a snail, so it wound round and round. Only difference with this place is that you started at the top in the Guggenheim and worked your way down to the bottom.
They hadn't passed any side entrances, which wasn't all that unusual. Quite often, the section of the redoubt that housed the Matrans unit was buried in the part of the complex farthest from the center in the entrance. Jack pointed in front of him.
There, up ahead.
As they walked, the round-roofed passage widened, becoming a clear, steep ramp that stopped abruptly at the single sextile door of a large freight elevator. Ryan turned toward Christy.
Anything?
Christy hesitated a moment, closing her eyes. Ryan noticed that her sentient red hair was coiled loosely at the nape of her neck. It was generally safe to assume that if her hair was bunched tight, then there might be danger in the air.
Well, there is the faint scent of pinion floating around from someplace outside. Wouldn't mind a little time resting among fresh mountain pines, lover.
JB took off his fedora and fanned his face with the brim.
No hostiles? That's good. Kind of warm, though. Feels like the aircon's not working properly.
Jack moved ahead, peering at the controls of the elevator. He turned back to face the others, who were bunching up around him. His snowy hair floated around his narrow face.
Control code's at the side.
Well, that makes life easier. What's the card say?
4 and 2 and 6 and 7. Go for it, Ryan?
Seems a most disgraceful breach of security to leave the code placed there for everyone to see. Head should roll.
Probably had to do it during the last evac before Skydark. Had to have been chaos, so they put the code up to save precious minutes. Time must have been real tight with the nukes already up and flying.
Makes sense. Let's go on to red again, friends. All right, Jack. Press the code in.
Huh. It's moving.
They could all hear the faint hum of distant machinery, which seemed to vibrate through the marrow of their bones. There was a light above the door, showing the progress of the elevator. The armorer had his head on one side, listening to the noise.
Seems like it's kind of high-pitched.
I was just thinking the same thing. It's taken such a long time. The exit from the shaft has to be a good way off. That's not unusual.
Christy took a couple of steps away from the others, glancing back over her shoulder.
I don't like it.
The indicator light showed that the cage was 3/4 of the way down.
A bad feeling? Someone coming down the tunnel?
Christy's feelings were so often right that they could never, ever be ignored.
I can't tell you. It's not like Muties or...
Nearly here. What do we do, Ryan?
Apart from Christy, they were all gathered in a tight knot in front of the sec door.
Danger. Close.
Get out, people. Now!
As they dove for the floor, they all heard the elevator door hiss open. But that sound was engulfed immediately.
Shit!
Ryan felt the hot breath of the lead shot from the blaster as it sliced by, just over his head. He took a moment to see that there was nobody in the rectangular cage, then stood, brushing cement dust off his pants.
Pair of sawed-down scatter guns, jerry-rigged with what looks like fishing line and a rather motley arrangement of 2x4s. The whole thing was set to shoot when the door opened. Crude, but effective.
JB crouched carefully outside the elevator, holding the door open with his left hand, peering at the smoking barrels of the booby trap.
12 gauges.
Mildred was rubbing her left elbow, where she'd gone down awkwardly.
Bitch, you bastards! Why they want to do that to fellow Americans?
Because, my dear Dr. Wyeth, the long-dead assassins imagined that if anyone attempted to come this way, they would probably be of the Russian persuasion.
Guess you might be right, for once, Doc.
Doc made her a low bow.
Good thing you sensed the danger, lover.
Yeah. Just about took us off at the shoulders.
JB stared into the empty cage, holding his Uzi at the ready in his right hand.
Reckon it's safe to use the elevator?
Fire blast, I don't know.
After my experience at the hands of that madman Jamevu in Puerto Rico, I am somewhat averse to making another jump quite so soon. Mayhap we could take the ride to the top and then exercise especial care once we arrive up there.
Why not?
Ryan entered the elevator first and bounced up and down a couple of times to test the springiness of the main support cables. He half expected them to suddenly give way and plunge the cage the rest of the way down to the bottom of the shaft. But everything felt right. He beckoned to the others, waiting until they were all inside before releasing the door mechanism.
When we reach the top, everyone get down on the floor before the doors slide open. Press the control jack.
The door shut, and the albino teenager pressed the recessed button that carried the illuminated symbol of an arrow pointing upward. Ryan flexed his knees to absorb the movement, watching the lighted panel above the door that showed their rising progress up the deep shaft. His index finger was tight on the trigger of the powerful Sig Sauer. Everyone was on full condition red, blasters cocked and ready for instant use. The humming of the pre-dark machinery sounded smooth and fluid, taking them steadily toward the top part of the old redoubt. Nobody spoke. Finally, the orange light gleamed close to the top. As one, the crew dropped to the floor. There was a slight jolting as the cage came to a halt. A moment's pause, then the steel set door slid open, revealing a brightly lit corridor.
No shooting, no mines, no trap waiting for us. Let's go take a look.
Ryan rose and stepped warily out of the cage, glancing both ways and seeing that there was no sign of anyone or anything. Christy followed, cautiously walking across the far side of the passage to where a large, multicolored plan of the redoubt was fixed to the wall. A hand-lettered piece of faded, pale blue paper was tacked next to it. The others joined them in the corridor, and the elevator door slid shut behind them.
Here's a notice.
What's it say?
Gaia, give me a chance.
They gathered around the tall, flame-haired woman as she read the notice, following the clumsy writing with her long index finger.
To anyone it concerns, this redoubt is now fully emptied on orders of Washington. Emergency quarters available only on a limited basis in section JA-33. Wait, there's something beneath it, scrawled in pencil. And put your head between your legs and kiss your ass goodbye.
Means there won't likely be any armament anywhere. Shame.
Ryan looked up at the map.
But it might mean some food and beds. Section JA-33. Where the... The green box up close to the main entrance is marked JA.
There it is, right by the entrance. Same level that we're on.
I wouldn't mind a good night's sleep in a decent bed before we tackle the outside world. What do you think, lover?
Sounds good to me. Let's go find this section. Best day on Orange.
Following the color-coded wall markings, it was easy to navigate through the maze of deserted corridors to section JA-33. The whole complex was completely cleansed, and the majority of the side doors locked tight. Those few that responded to Jack's eager hands were echoing bolts of empty darkness. JB pointed with the muzzle of his Uzi at the green letters and numbers on the door before him.
Here we are. Must be through this door.
Watch out for booby traps. Open it very carefully.
JB heeded Ryan's advice, but there was no wired gran or cocked scattergun behind the sec door, just the routine setup that they'd seen on earlier occasions. There were four white-walled rooms, and each contained a dozen metal-framed beds with rolled plastic-covered mattresses and neatly folded gray blankets. An olive-green metal locker stood alongside each bed. There was a pair of identical bathrooms. When Mildred turned on the chromed faucets, nothing happened for several long seconds. The water that gushed out was initially rust-colored and cold, but it quickly cleared and began to warm up, eventually pouring out steaming. Jack had immediately headed straight for the dining and kitchen section.
Whew! Ace on the line. Plenty of food.
Within an hour, the group of friends were washed and settled before a long, rectangular, plastic-topped dining room table. A white dish bearing an army stamp sat on the table in front of Doc. It was brimming with a variegated sludge. Doc's spoon settled on one side.
Curried king crab gumbo. Succulent is the word that springs to my mind.
You mean it actually tastes like something? The label on my can claimed it's tender chunks of pan-fried boneless chicken, tenderized for my dining pleasure, and a flavorsome sauce with hand-picked herbs and spices, with smoked beans on the side.
And?
And it tastes like seven different kinds of shit.
My can said it was a lobster bisque with assorted spring vegetables. I can taste plenty of chemical additives, Salt. A lot of sugar. Not much lobster.
End of round one. I'll finish what you don't want.
Well, go open another can for yourself. My beef stew's better than a lot of things I've eaten. Definitely beats dead rat and road-killed toad.
I confess that my soup is passingly adequate.
How about you, lover? What wonderful blue ribbon delicacy did you pick off the shelves?
Ryan stirred the bowl with his spoon, peering down at the speckled liquid, picking up a lump of something green and staring at it.
I think this is a pea. The strands of yellow are probably cheese.
Cheesy peas, or is it peasy cheese? Greasy and freezy, easy on the palate with a hint of teasy.
Yeah, we get the idea, Doc.
My apologies. It's that tendentious old habit of mine of thoughtlessly engaging my mouth before I have allowed my poor, tired brain to operate.
They carried on eating in silence, broken only by Jack's slurping and the rattle of spoons on dishes. The albino teenager went out into the kitchen, and after several minutes reappeared with a fresh bowl of food.
Gaia, what is that?
Chicken rice, ginger lemongrass. Want some? Big can. Plenty left.
Thanks a lot, Jack, but no thanks. I think what I've eaten should charge up the battery for a day or so. Right now, I think I might head for bed.
My thoughts exactly.
Everyone seemed to feel the same, and in a minute, Jack was left alone at the Formica top table, busily finishing off his Thai chicken. J.B. and Mildred took one of the rooms. The dormitory, like the rest of the redoubt, was kept at a constant 70 degrees, the air dry and slightly dusty. The faint scent of pine seemed to have disappeared. Doc, Dean, and Jack shared a second room. The old man's stomach threatened to be as vocal as Doc himself.
Revenge of the curried king crab gumbo. Best fasten up your seatbelts, gentlemen. I fear that we are all in for a somewhat bumpy evening.
In the privacy of their own room, Ryan and Christy had pushed a pair of beds together and overlaid the blankets. It was relatively rare for them to spend a night feeling completely safe and relaxed. The outer doors of the redoubt were undeniably closed and sec-locked, and Ryan had personally slipped the double bolts that sealed off the JA-33 section of the complex. Ryan and Christy went to bed naked, which was unusual for them. Her Smith & Wesson Model 640 double-action blaster with the snub-nose barrel was tucked under the pillow. Ryan had laid his long blaster, the 7.62mm SSG-70 Steyr bolt-action rifle, on the floor on his side of the makeshift double bed. The 6-hour P226 pistol was beside it. He worked the dimmer switch, reducing the room to near darkness, before padding across to climb in next to Christy, feeling the warmth of her body.
I love her.
She reached out to him, allowing her fingers to trail down across his scarred chest, over the flat, muscular wall of his stomach, then lower, finding him instantly hard, ready for her. They teased and touched each other with the tender, sure knowledge of longtime lovers. Ryan's fingers caressed the soft flesh between her slightly parted thighs.
A quickie to start?
Quicker the better, lover.
Ryan rolled on top of her, guiding himself with his right hand, starting the steady, rhythmic pressure. He supported some of his weight on his elbows, kissing her mouth, sliding a little way up the bed to make the contact deeper. He could feel her amazing control, her body seeming to shrink about him, squeezing him tight, waves of pressure gripping him and sucking him deeper. Her body rose to meet him on every thrust, her mouth open, her eyes closed.
Not yet.
Ryan held back, trying to set his mind onto something else, slowing himself to meet her readiness, aware of her muscles butterflying around him, sensing her breath coming faster.
Oh, yes, Laura, yes.
For several long, soft moments, they clung to each other, letting their breath return to normal, feeling each other's heartbeat.
Another?
Why not?
Jack had fallen instantly into a deep sleep, flat on his back. He had stripped off to his t-shirt and pants, using only a single blanket to cover his skinny body. The taped hilt of one of his throwing knives protruded from beneath the Army-issue pillow. Dean as well had fallen asleep quickly, his blaster on top of the neat pile of clothing beside his cot. Doc had peeled off his cracked knee boots and the ancient frock coat and breeches, then stretched out on a bed. His sword stick and the ponderous Lama blaster were on the floor at his side. Though he felt very tired, partly due to his recent experiences in Puerto Rico, sleep refused to come to him. He found himself slipping into that uneasy land that dwelt part in light and part in darkness, where gibbering specters came unbidden, and restful slumber was an eternity away, where madness waited in the shadows. Doc lay on his back, staring up at the white ceiling, trying to steady his breathing. But he was all too conscious of the blood pounding in his ears. A nagging headache throbbed behind his temple. He carried a silver half-hunter watch in one of the pockets of his frock coat, and he finally sat up, leaned down, and fumbled for it. Angling it toward the dim light, he tried to catch the reflection off the slender hands.
2:05. Ooh, it would be wise to go to the toilet.
Doc crawled out of bed, his knees creaking and cracking. He stooped to pull on his pants, then padded barefoot toward the door. Jack stirred at the movement, blinking open a ruby eye, his hair spilling across the pillow like frozen spray.
Where you going, Doc?
I must worship at the shrine of Thomas Crapper, back in a jiffy, or less.
As Doc left the room, his head was spinning, and he began to fear that he was about to lose control of his lower bodily functions. He moved fast along the short stretch of corridor, past several other doors, until he reached the white-tiled washroom. Gingerly, he sat on the flush.
Welcome to the cloacal throne, Theophilus, for which relief much, much thanks.